It is Friday morning down here in the broadcast bunker in the studio. Drinking my coffee, and my favorite part of the whole week is, of course, rolling the Bob Davis podcast radio show. This is podcast 582, the Bob Davis podcasts. And of course, this is the Bob Davis podcast radio show number 50, whatever, 57. All these numbers, you know, let's just roll segment one. Here we go. Welcome to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. For all the podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. Well, there's a lot to get to in this show. It's very interesting what's happening as the Electoral College prepares to actually vote for the president in the coming week. Donald Trump being the so-called president-elect because he managed a majority of electoral votes in the 2016 general election. But there are now full-page ads in newspapers and other attempts to influence the electors. And then we have protesters demanding the Electoral College be abolished because it's not democratic. At the same time, the Russians, quote, intervened and influenced the vote, somehow getting Trump elected, now buttressed by reports from U.S. intelligence services. And just this week, the president's press secretary is also taking up the theme, saying that Trump in his campaign, quote, unquote, knew the Russians were doing this and said nothing. And I haven't checked all of it, but I'm not hearing a lot of proof about that. All of this is combining and conflated with the fake news controversy and the narrative that the Russians did this too, putting out fake news. This influenced people unduly, apparently, and changed the outcome of the election. Now, none of that is known, but this is the idea. This is what is being put out there. And unfortunately, it is necessary to address this controversy now because it's upsetting me. As I said on last week's show, this is an attempt to delegitimize the Trump presidency. And I'm certainly no fan of Trump. That's not the intention here. It's just what I see happening is really an egregious politicization of the electoral process in this country. Say that three times. Politicization. whatever. You know what I mean. Suddenly, a democratic process that has existed for over 250 years, which has ensured a smooth transfer of power, is, quote, undemocratic, resulting in the election of someone who isn't, quote, legally the president. This is all conjecture. Suddenly, it's the Russians doing this, as though no foreign country has ever tried to influence U.S. politics, legally or otherwise. And no proof yet exists of Russian involvement. It is circumstantial evidence or it's speculation. So I'm going to have to break down what I know and ask the questions that I have, because most of the people in media won't. They're too busy telling you what you should think about this. And honestly, I don't know what to think about it. I think it's a very interesting development. You know, I talked last week about fake news, what it is, and I'm not going to do that again in this show because I don't think we need to, you know, explain fake news again every time I do a show about it. But the key thing here is to attach a bullseye to this bugaboo of fake news, and that is what is going on. And this bullseye is supposed to prove, and that is in quotes, prove that it has resulted in the illegitimate election of someone who, quote, shouldn't have won, unquote. So we have to do something about it. We can't have all this free speech because it's like yelling fire in a crowded theater. You know, free speech is dangerous and it has to be controlled. That is pretty Orwellian. As well as all the comparisons to Hitler, and this is how the Nazis seized power, and this is why some people refer to the left as a fever swamp, right? As you know, and I'm going to say it again, I did not endorse or support any of the candidates for president. I did not tell you who to vote for because I think it is presumptuous and arrogant of me to do that, and I refuse to defend the presidency of Donald Trump. But that doesn't mean that I'm not going to point out things that are ridiculous because they need to be pointed out. So I'm going to do some of that in this show. One of the things I wanted to do in this show is to ask, what if? There's been a lot of talk about the foibles and missteps of the Trump campaign, talk about the transition not being smooth. Most of it, by the way, is coming from critics, and you hear this all the time. The fact is that Donald Trump's people are now in the process of filling thousands of government jobs, and office seekers are circling Trump Tower and Washington like carrion birds. And they said the same thing about the Obama administration early on, that he hadn't filled certain positions. And I've been very critical of his rhetoric, Trump's rhetoric, and his campaign, especially his economic plans. But as the Trump team begins to take shape, it has occurred to me to ask, what if? What if the things that aren't supposed to work, work? What if he is able to restore some sense of purpose and direction to the United States? What if he is able to grow the economy? What if he is able to act in ways that gain respect and, yes, maybe even a little bit of fear from our enemies and for the positions of the United States and hence respect? I'm not saying he will or won't. I'm saying, just simply as an observer, asking what if. They're not doing that right now. What if all the experts and the pundits and the talking heads have been too pessimistic about the next president and the people he is picking for his cabinet? Trump is going to make mistakes. There's no question about it. But what if? We'll play that game a little bit in this show, or maybe we'll just leave it as it is. To think in terms of what if is, at least a fair question at this point. And this isn't a sudden endorsement of Trump and his policies, whatever they might be. Just looking at what's going on this week, I've noticed criticisms and predictions about everything this man says and does, about where things are going to lead. And it feels premature and very pessimistic to me when there is no evidence or call for that kind of pessimism. He'll have plenty of time to be criticized. Finally, we are living through an era of disruption. Some are calling the Trump candidacy and future presidency, in fact, a disruption. I did a podcast this week about disruption. A disruption means to break into pieces, to split asunder, to break the mold, so to speak. A radical change because of the introduction of something new, something different that changes the dynamic of a market. People thought Barack Obama introduced radical change to the way we think about government, and maybe he did, but maybe Obama wasn't the change we were waiting for. Maybe Obama really was more of a status quo president, considering 8 years of Clinton and then 8 years of Bush. Maybe the real change agent will be Donald Trump. And this is what I mean by saying, what if? I'm not saying he will be or he is or making any predictions. I'm saying the people that are criticizing and attacking may be too pessimistic and too premature at this point in time. Again, not saying it's true. It's saying that it seems to me the media and all the so-called experts, as well as the side that lost, is spending an awful lot of time telling people that this is going to be a disaster and there something needs to be done. So many of them are saying this. All Trump really has to do to prove that he is mildly competent is just maybe make some good decisions by not being a crazy Medusa, and he'll be golden. We're living through a general disruption that Obama and Trump are really, in the end, only a small part of. What's happening is old systems and ideas are being disrupted. That is, they are breaking down and failing. And systems that you might be surprised to be failing, particularly broadcast and print media, but also cable TV news and talk radio, the stalwarts of the last 4, 5, 6 years in political coverage, are all breaking down in view of the disruptions from new media and social networks. And actually, a lot of it has to do with the actual tools that we use to consume this media, smartphones, pads, and so forth, that just 5 years ago did not exist in the numbers and with the power that they exist today. This is the disruption that I'm talking about, and this is just the beginning of this disruption. A good example is that Trump doesn't call Fox News or the local talk radio station as he might have done 10 years ago when he wants to say something. He just tweets it out, and the world reacts to a tweet. Think about that. Think about the intensity of somebody being able to tweet something out, get a huge reaction to draw people's attention away from other things. So we're going to talk about this disruption a little bit in the show, probably in the last segment, to get you ready for the week. But there's a couple of other things we got to talk about coming up. Suddenly, the Electoral College isn't Democratic, and Donald Trump is seizing power the way the Nazis did. Really? This is something that absolutely has to be addressed. Next. Next. You're hearing the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. For more of the Bob Davis Podcast and to sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show.
It's all right.
Okay, just ahead of segment two, so we're going into the deep freeze for the weekend. Now, it is going to warm up next week, but I got to tell you, this is the kind of weather that produces plumbing, potential problem, problems with plumbing. And if you've ever had pipes burst in this kind of weather, it's always an issue. So let me just give you a number to call. If you have emergency problems, think of Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for home or business, because when it comes to keeping all of your systems up and running right, especially these days at home or business, when you have plumbing or heating problems, you want reliable service and you want reliable emergency service. That's Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. We are pretty much beyond the heating checks because everybody's heat is on. But again, when it comes to quality replacement and repair of plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, and of course, we're talking about heating at this time of year, and we're talking about pipes at this time of year, residential and business, don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, in St. Paul, 651-224-4771, online at ryanplumbing.com. And then at the end of this podcast, I'll have a special message for plumbers, pipe fitters, sheet metal workers, HVAC control specialists, and Ryan Plumbing, so stand by for that. Here is segment two of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. To hear more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, visit the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. Okay, so this week, the most ridiculous thing out there is that since America is supposed to be a democracy and the Electoral College is not a democratic process, America can't be a democracy. And by the way, this is how the Nazis seized power. And it has to be addressed because there's so many inconsistencies and flat-out incorrect statements in that we have to go through it. First of all, let's talk about the Electoral College briefly. There's no basis to suggest that this is not a democratic process. Electors aren't chosen for life by the king. They are nominated and elected by state party political bodies across the country. They are impaneled according to state election law. They have one job and one job only, and that is to select the president of the United States according to state election law. This country is a representative republic with three countervailing branches, 50 state governments with the same kind of government. The Bill of Rights recognizes the power of individual states through the 10th Amendment. State law, not federal, regulates most aspects of our elections, including the running of each state's electoral college and the running of state and local elections. Our Constitution defines, to a basic extent, how the elections of federal officials are conducted in each state in Article 1 and Article 2 and various amendments. The president is elected indirectly by the people in each of the 50 states in one territory, which is the District of Columbia. What the United States isn't is a parliamentary system where the executive is chosen from the legislature. Our president is not part of the legislature. In fact, in formulating the U.S. Constitution, the Virginia plan proposed selecting the president from the national legislature. The New Jersey plan called for more of a possibility of a plural executive. Some people wanted to elect the president directly. That was opposed by slaveholding states that did not have a large population of voting eligible people. Electors voted on by the people in individual states candidates would eventually elect the president, and an electoral college was kind of a compromise. Now, I don't want to go on too much in depth, but Federalist 68 states that the idea was that the electors would possess a little more knowledge and experience than the average person. Choosing the president is only one part of the electoral college's mission. The other is to assure a smooth transition of power from one president to the next. Here again, Federalist 68 suggests that the electoral college select the president with as little opportunity as possible to tumult and disorder, and every practicable obstacle should be opposed to cabal, intrigue, and corruption in the running of the Electoral College. So suggesting that electors ought to be able to select the president in peace and quiet is what that's all about, without being exhorted with death threats and ads in the New York Times about Russians rigging the U.S. election. Now, who's doing that? Well, Hillary Clinton supporters are doing it. Trump supporters aren't doing it. So getting rid of the Electoral College, and this is the next suggestion, would just be something that would be almost difficult, impossible rather, because it would require amending the Constitution. You would have to amend Articles 1 and 2. You would have to amend or repeal the 10th Amendment. You would have to replace it with a new text describing how elections are to be conducted in total. The federal government would have to conduct them, and it's complex. Then Congress would have to propose it. The states, two-thirds of the states would have to ratify it, 38 of 50, within a time limit. So guess what? We're not going to be getting rid of the Electoral College anytime soon. And if we did, I would be very concerned about how a popular election would be conducted. Finally, is the statement, this is how Hitler came to power. So first of all, no, this is not how Hitler came to power in Germany, and this is not how the Nazis came to power in Germany. First of all, since 1871 up until when Hitler became the chancellor, Germany was governed by a bicameral legislature. They had a Reichstag and a Reichsrat, I think. The Reichstag was the lower house, the Reichsrat was the upper house, selected by individual states, but the Reichstag was elected by a national election. And of course, the upper house eventually lost power and was reduced to irrelevance around the time that Hitler came to power. Now, very quickly, the Weimar Constitution laid out that the members of the Reichstag were to be elected by a general universal suffrage, a national vote, according to the principle of something called proportional representation. And the rules allowed a party to be seated in the Reichstag with as little as 0.4% of the national vote, or 60,000 votes. And what happened there was that there were lots of little parties that were represented in the chamber. With a national party list, a stable government was basically impossible at that point. Now, because of bad policy, at that time, we had the rise of the Nazis. Each party wanted to pull Germany in a completely different direction. The Nazis wanted to go one direction. None of them agreed. You had centrists, communists, socialists, and so forth. The Reichstag could force the resignation of whole cabinets or revoke emergency powers of presidents. I've never been able to figure out what Article 48 was and how they chose their presidents. By the late 1920s, leaders resorted to running things by decree. They couldn't dissolve the legislature, and on and on and on. Here's the main takeaway. The Nazi Party was a small party when it won only 12 seats in 1928. It gained 95 seats over the next 2 years. By the end of 1932, the Nazis and communists, both enemies of the parliamentary system, had the majority of seats. Hitler came to power in Germany from then due to the extensive use of powers granted to the presidency in Article 48 and the use of something called the Enabling Acts after he had been appointed as chancellor. So the final Enabling Act in 1933 meant that the Reichstag gave up its exclusive responsibility for the exercise of legislative power and became a rubber stamp. Does that sound like anything in a stable two-party representative system of the United States, whether it's the Electoral College that chooses the president or not? No. And this is not how Hitler came to power. We have a very stable government with checks and balances throughout. We have defined powers whose job it is to vet options and control and compete with different centers of government. Each branch, including the cabinet, which is part of the executive branch, has a lot of power. For all its faults, you know, the Republican Party is not some embryonic Nazi party. Fascism has always been a third way between conservatives and socialists and communists. We don't have that in this country. Fascism is not from the right, and it does not come from from the right. Mussolini, the father of national socialism, was in fact a socialist to begin with. Germany and Italy were unstable governments in the early 20th century because of the bad policy that their very unstable governments promulgated. With Harvard professor Larry Lessig, a former Democratic presidential candidate, offering legal assistance to rogue electors, and with at least one elector refusing to back Trump with rumors, and that's all they are, that there are 20 other electors who will desert Trump this Monday when they meet in respective capitals to cast their vote. The next few days should be interesting, but if it is thrown to Congress, they're still going to put Trump in there. So we'll talk about it. And we're going to talk about this cry that the Russians intervened in this election, and it was the Russians that influenced this election with their fake news and the WikiLeaks and everything else. None of it is substantiated with evidence. It's theories. But we're going to talk about the idea that the Russians did this next. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. For more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show.
You meet me at the station. Can't get you used to patience. Wish this time could just be a bit shortened. Between us 6 million seasons. Gotta run and make it and die.
Okay, just ahead of segment three of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Got to tell you, I've been out driving around, watching people slipping and sliding and thinking, you know, if you have an SUV, this is a lot easier. I have a Crown Vic, and so I put a lot of weight in the back end, and there's nothing better than that rear-wheel drive V8 for me. It just feels great, and of course, my Crown Vic came from xgovernmentcars.com. xgovernmentcars.com is Minnesota's only dealer specializing in one-owner, professionally maintained government fleet, cars, trucks, and SUVs. And if you need an SUV now, this is the place to get it. And this is the time, because they're offering $500 off on SUVs all the way till the end of the year at xgovernmentcars.com. They have the Expeditions, they have Yukons, they have the Crown Vics, of course, while they last, the Ford Police SUVs, the Ford Police sedans, Dodge Chargers, Chevy Impala, V8s. And of course, if you have a job and you need a loan, you can get approved. Ex-government cars can get you financed, and they take trades. They pay the highest values for trades every day without all the bull. And don't forget the 3-day love it guarantee exclusively at Ex-Government Cars. I've had 3 Crown Vics, of course, mobile podcast command from Ex-Government Cars and Ex-Government Trucks. Get your butt down to Ex-Government Cars, now open in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North. Call them old school at 763-777-8782. Check them out online to see what's available now at ExGovernmentCars.com.
ExGovernmentCars.com.
Okay, here is segment 3 of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. You're hearing the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. To sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter, The Bob Line, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. For more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, go to thebobdavispodcasts.com. Now, the second big issue to deal with in this show is this statement, the Russians hacked the U.S. elections. And there's really two issues here. First is an attempt by a foreign government to influence opinion in a U.S. general election through fake news and other propaganda, and perhaps an illegal hacking of information from Secretary Clinton's personal email server, which is technically illegal anyway and released through WikiLeaks. And in any case, much less secure than an actual State Department system. So I don't know that I can tell from the stories that I've read whether or not they're alleging that the Russians hacked into the United States government's computers. But what we do have is the president's press secretary, a former Republican candidate, Democrat hitman David Brock, and others conflating these two completely different issues to turn it into one big, gigantic issue. Finally, there is the question of whether whatever was done by whomever or whatever actually had an effect on the outcome of the election and in those states in question. First, the Russians, it is charged, are behind the WikiLeaks document dump, which contained emails gleaned from Secretary Clinton's personal email server. As far as I can tell, this story has come from the CIA, which, by the way, still works for President Obama. The CIA doesn't cite any sources, only that the hack is consistent with previous Russian efforts in places like the Ukraine. What I can tell, as far as I, you know, my little research is, what the media is talking about is a Washington Post story that cites an unidentified source who attended a security briefing for the senators where it was suggested that the Russians are the source for the WikiLeaks emails by an unidentified CIA briefer. So we don't have any names. We don't have any sources. The quote is that CIA's analysts have high confidence, but we don't know who did it. We don't know who did the report. We don't have any evidence, as in a Russian official who ordered it or someone who worked for them who can say with authority, yeah, they did it. So without sources, such as a story, that has two independent sources confirming a conclusion, it's pure conjecture and it's a trial balloon, let's say. But okay, what do they have? Well, if they have what they have, if the report is true, they have circumstantial evidence. The hacking efforts that the Russians are supposedly responsible for are consistent with previous efforts attributed to Russia during elections in the Ukraine. There was a Bloomberg story this week that just cautions people to understand that this is a complex process and proving A, B, or C and tying it to the Russian government is quite a step. And then I wondered whether or not this is a crime when you consider the fact that the emails came from a server that was itself a U.S. security breach and technically illegal, right? Literally illegal, materially illegal. So how is it a crime? She did this to herself, really. Did it affect the outcome of the U.S. election? That would be another question. Well, how would you know? You know, the ballots are secret and there's no way to know why people voted the way they did. The storyline is the Russians made Trump president because they like him. There's no proof of that. Even if you wanted to believe that, there still is no proof of that. Another statement is there's some kind of backroom deal between Trump and the Russians. Therefore, something must be done. We have to put some controls on free speech to stop this stuff from getting on the internet. We have to get the electors. We have to get to the electors so they can choose someone else the Russians didn't like who, Hillary Clinton? That's what the Electoral College supposedly is for, even though, again, Hillary Clinton wanted to get rid of it. Maybe the Russians did hack Hillary's email, which is a real good reason not to have such a server in the first place and why it is literally a federal crime to have it. It might not even be a crime for them to have hacked this and given it to WikiLeaks, considering the fact that she shouldn't have had the servers to begin with. So that's a legality we'll have to look into. Now, there is a greater question here, which is, have other governments tried to influence U.S. Elections? Really? Really, Pollyanna? Most certainly, the Israelis, the Saudis, the British, the Chinese over the years have tried to influence U.S. elections with various ways. We know the Chinese, the Russians, and North Vietnamese tried to influence U.S. politics during the Vietnam War and the Cold War. Going back to the Civil War, the British tried to influence U.S. elections. We know the Iranians have tried to influence our political processes. We do it to other countries. We know that George Soros has tried consistently to influence U.S. election processes, and no one's up in arms about that, right? So this isn't new. And if it isn't new, then why hasn't President Obama suddenly now caring about this so much? And why wasn't he enraged about this 2-3 years ago? Now, is it a serious issue if a country like Russia tries to impinge itself in our politics? Yes, it is. And hearings need to be held and investigations on this issue should be continued. And we need to get a resolution on it, especially if evidence appears that they hacked into voting machines. But so far, recounts either show more votes for Trump or the same outcome. There's a story this week that I love that some of the precincts in Detroit had 2/3 more voters than live citizens registered. And since it is Detroit, how much you want to bet that they weren't voting for Trump in those precincts? And maybe they should investigate that as well. What this is This is David Brock painting a target on someone or something and banging away at it with the mighty Wurlitzer of the left-wing political assistants at the White House, from Congress, the Republican academics, Hollywood, because they know the media will cover it. It's really simple Saul Alinsky tactics, and it plays into the idea that the Illuminati is not going to let Donald Trump become the president, and it creates doubt. It makes people question the validity of the American political system, and if that is the goal of the Russian intelligence community, then they have succeeded because the Democrats have decided to make an issue out of it. If Trump doesn't get 270 electoral votes, as I said, it'll eventually go to the full Congress, which is going to put Trump in there. And if for some reason Hillary Clinton becomes the president, how do you know the Russians didn't want that outcome after all? Because they're so smart. They're so wily, those Russians. First, a couple of things. The top U.S. spy agency, which is the Director of National Intelligence, overseeing 17 agencies, has not embraced this CIA assessment that says the Russians are responsible for the WikiLeaks hack. A recent Politico article, this is one of my favorites too from this week, and this is something every Democrat should read, talks about how Hillary Clinton's campaign refused to send resources once Iowa was clearly lost to Michigan. Bottom line is her campaign wasn't the buttoned-up professional machine the media had people believing. Union personnel supporting Clinton were ready to make sure that she won Michigan, but they were never sent to that state. There are many theories as to why Secretary Clinton lost the election in 2016 but won the popular vote. Most of them proliferate from the Democratic camp. First, it was women who should have voted for her, but either they didn't show up or voted for Trump, and something's wrong with women. Isn't it a shame? And then it was Democrat voters who didn't show up for whatever reason, and isn't it a shame? Then they hit on this Russian intrigue, which never, you'll notice, actually tells you how they managed to know which states to make Trump win so that he could be president. You know, Florida was very close. He could have lost Florida. It was so close. North Carolina was close. Pennsylvania was close. Michigan was close. He could have lost Iowa. He could have lost Missouri. He could have won Minnesota. The fact is, Trump managed to win those key states for an electoral victory because Clinton's campaign was unable to get the vote out where it mattered the most. And if they want to investigate voter fraud, I'm sure there's enough to go around, and they may find that Trump would actually, if they start throwing out votes, especially in Detroit, they might find that Trump's victory and his lead would actually widen in this. You know, it's partially political theater, but it's also partially political comedy, this whole thing. And I really hope it doesn't turn into a constitutional crisis in the next few days. We'll just have to wait and see what the Electoral College vote turns out to be. Coming up, we're living through an age of disruption, radical changes that split our world asunder. What and who do you believe, and how do you figure out what's real and what's fake? Good luck. Next. For all the podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. For more of this show, visit gcnlive.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show.
Do you recall not long ago when you would walk on the sidewalk? Innocent, remember, all we did was care for each other. But the night was warm, we were bold and young.
As long as we're on the cold weather motif, just ahead of segment four of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show. So the way I deal with all this cold weather is I do yoga in hot rooms. And I've noticed, you know, when you're going through these temperature extremes and you're practicing yoga, or you're doing CrossFit, or you're doing Soul Cycle or something like that, where you're really sweating a lot. You know, we were talking about this the other day. We're talking about, you know, a very large temperature difference between 14 below or 4 below real temperature and 105 degrees in a crowded room doing yoga with a bunch of other people. And when we sweat, we can get dehydrated. Even if you drink a lot of water, you can end up sore, you can be sluggish, you can be tired, and you'd be surprised what happens when you use Hydrus. Hydrus transformed my yoga practice. It doesn't matter whether you cycle, do CrossFit, lift used or do competitive sports, Hydrus makes a huge difference. What is it? It's the new high-performance beverage that uses exclusive NanoSome technology to get electrolytes into your muscles really fast, but it has so many other great benefits. Hydrus helps me take it to the edge. You drink before, during, and after practice, whatever it is, and it makes a huge difference. And of course, taking it to the edge is what it's all about. It's made a huge difference in my yoga practice because it's enabled me to do things and to actually get down into it and practice yoga in ways that I never could before. Join the performance hydration revolution. Visit HydrusPerformance.com. That's HydrusPerformance.com. HYDRUS. You go to that website or click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page and you'll see how to use it. You'll see who uses it. You'll see how it works. HydrusPerformance.com. And thanks, guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. Pilots, you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings. Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. Bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. To find out how, click on the Alpha Systems banners at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page to find out more about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator. And thanks for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcast. All right, here's segment four of this week's Bob Davis podcast radio show. Number 57 podcast, 580, whatever it is. Two, three, I don't know. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Remember, for all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. Just one more thing, picking up on the last segment. If there's evidence proving that there was collusion between the Trump campaign and a Russian hack of voting machines that made him the president-elect, then that perhaps is a reason not to certify him to be the president. And while it wouldn't surprise me in the least if this were true, since I don't trust any of them, not being surprised by something like that and proving it are two different things. So this would be the time to put up or shut up. The bottom line is this. If you can't say that there's a child sex ring being run out of a certain pizza parlor in Washington without substantiation that can stand up in court, then you can't say Trump and the Russians worked together to win the election without substantiation that would stand up in court. There are certainly a lot of people, including the families of those killed in Benghazi, that thought something was fishy there too, and they were generally pilloried. There were a lot of people who thought the Secretary of State having her own email server was also fishy, but that was met with steady denials and obfuscations and pretzel logic. Same thing with the Clinton Global Initiative. And we're supposed to ignore that stuff, but somehow not ignore the Trump stuff, which is not substantiated. Then we have the fake news issue, the allegations that the Russians planted all these stories, these terrible stories that make David Brock cry crocodile tears. David Brock, who has certainly spread plenty of political feces in an effort to smear and otherwise destroy his political opponents. John Podesta, David Brock, even Hillary Clinton have been practitioners of the black arts of politics for many years. They know how the game is played. For once, my opinion of all this is that they got a taste of their own medicine. Unfortunately, whoever creates these fake news stories now knows how to hurt them. So you can look forward to more videos on YouTube about Hillary Clinton getting some disease because she eats babies, more stories about the Illuminati conspiracy and how all those bigwigs on both sides of the fence in Washington are part of some ritual mind control sexual ceremony held at big mansions in the woods, like on the movie Eyes Wide Shut, or stories about how Hillary is a reptilian alien taking her orders from her betters who live in the hollow earth. For all the people decrying these kinds of very entertaining fantasy videos, better known as fake news, and demanding something be done, we just can't have all this free speech, why it's so dangerous. We can't have all these people yelling fire in crowded theaters. We can't have future secretaries of defense tweeting out false stories, God forbid. Well, here's the thing. You don't have to believe this stuff either. And if you want to believe it, that's your problem. And I'll be blunt. If you get your news from Facebook and YouTube, I can't help you. If you believe what Lifeset and Breitbart and Huffington and the Daily Cause and Red State are pushing, I can't help you. If you're still interested in talk radio and watching 24-hour news cable services for your information and trusting anything that they say, Well, you know, we used to say to people back on the day, on another radio station, you're an idiot. If you can't read a newspaper and discern facts because you're, up on a story from other sources, I can't help you. Let me answer you this. Would you consider yourself someone who deserves to live in a free society if you can't tell the difference between fake nonsense and real news? So the reality is that these new technologies that we all are working with, new tools, whether it's the device you're holding in your hand, your iPad, your desktop, this stuff is more powerful than the most powerful computers we couldn't even buy less than 20 years ago. And the software that they run and allows you to access information are also stunningly more powerful. You can read source documents, you can watch speeches, you can see videos, you can read news stories from several different sources. You know, I remember going, I used to have to go downtown Minneapolis to buy my newspapers because you couldn't get the Wall Street Journal anywhere. And now it's available at the local grocery store or coffee shops. That means you have access to more info from several different sources than almost all the rest of the people in the world. And if you use your time to get information from hyper-biased sources, like your brother-in-law who just kind of knows people, or YouTube videos about a planet in the outer reaches of our solar systems, or the CERN project altering history in separate realities, then you are nothing more than a pawn. Banning Russians, Chinese, and George Soros isn't going to stop them. Fake news will not be stopped at the expense of our rights to free speech. It's just going to show up under a different tag or on a VPN or on some dark corner of the internet somewhere. And again, you don't have to believe it. You can look at it and take it in, but if you have other news sources besides Facebook, you'll know it's nonsense. Sometimes the fact is that some of these citizen journalists and people who generally create alarmist content actually do get a story and have a point or are right, and nobody listens to them until they get there and they have that moment. And that is the stuff of Hollywood drama. But most of the time, us, the citizens, have a responsibility to learn as much about stuff as we can. And that doesn't mean sitting there like a bump on a log demanding that someone tell you the truth, because they're only too happy to tell you the truth. And basically, they will tell you what you want to hear. And when you are the kind of person that just wants to hear what you want to hear, then there are lots of people from different parts of the political spectrum who are only too happy to make you think that they're the nicest guys in the world, smile in your face, and sell you down the river. Isn't this the history of politics in this country and everywhere? You know, it's about a citizenry that's informed and involved, because the disruption is going to get worse as these different technologies continue to disrupt everything that has been designed originally to centralize authority and power, as it literally is atomized by these technologies. Adjusting to these disrupting and disturbing things is actually up to us. No one is going to do it for us. We're going to be victims of it if we can't learn how to stand up and handle it. And if you say, well, how can I handle this? It's very simple. You have to watch what people do and not what they say. And you have to forget Democrat and Republican, liberal and conservative nonsense. It is about the actions these people take as officials that tell you whether they are for liberty or tyranny. Those are the two poles that we really should be thinking about. All this stuff going on is designed to confuse and create the very mob the founders worried the most about. And that's why they created a very stable representative republic. I do, though, have a word of advice for the Democratic Party. For years now, the Democratic Party has promulgated policies which are designed to, quote unquote, help people. Oh, Republicans have done things too, but they will have plenty of time to be criticized because they're in power now. But Democrat policy, from the Great Society to the War on Poverty to the New Deal to Obamacare, have been around for years and are supposed to help people. Is it possible, Democrats, that the reason Hillary Clinton lost the vote in key places are places where the little guy has just about had it, where working people who really don't have a political orientation are just not seeing the promised results? People who live in the worst neighborhoods, people who go to the worst schools, people who deal with state and local governments that just aren't functional. Maybe what the Democrats should do, rather than protest and complain and scream and yell about a national emergency because their guy didn't win, is to go back to the drawing board and examine their policies, economic theories, you know, all that stuff, with an eye toward whether or not they actually work and come up with some new ideas. Maybe that's why Clinton, with all of her networks of support and rich educated donors and unions, couldn't muster a big enough majority in states that used to be the bulwark of the Democrat constituency. Michigan and Pennsylvania. How do you lose Michigan and Pennsylvania and almost lose in Minnesota and lose in Wisconsin if you're a Democrat? In the end, I believe it's going to come down to whether it was the candidate, a flawed icon from the 1990s that people really never liked as much as her former president husband, or maybe even the policies of the Democratic Party that haven't been working very well, that have divided the classes, that involved protests about everything, bankrupt government worker pension funds, stadiums that are, you know, places where rich Democrat operatives can entertain their friends at football games while the regular guy, Frank and Joe, sit at a filthy bar down the street paying a 10% tax to pay for the stadium. Stuff like that. Maybe the Democrats lost this time because the voters are trying to send them a message. And maybe the message is simply shut up and go back to work, because maybe the Democrats can do a lot better than Hillary Clinton. And what we're witnessing, as long as we don't end up with a constitutional crisis next week, is a very weak and divided Republican Party taking control of 28 or 29 state legislatures and gubernatorial mansions, both houses of the federal government and the presidency, in just the last 5 or 6 years. That's extraordinary. And I think that's as much of a commentary on the failure of the Democratic Party to continue to win state elections and local elections, and finally the presidency. So we'll see what happens next week. And if there's some crazy thing that goes down, then there'll be more to talk about. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. That's going to do it for this week. A lot to take in. Boop. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show.
Like a sound you hear that lingers in your ear, but you can't forget from sundown to sunset. It's all in the air, you hear it everywhere. No matter what you do, it's gonna grab a hold on you. Grab a hold on you. Grab a hold on you. Grab a hold on you.
Back in the studio, and I told you I'd have a special message for pipe fitters and plumbers and sheet metal workers and HVAC control specialists from Ryan Plumbing. You know, they've been growing very steady at Ryan Plumbing and doing a lot of the right things, making good decisions, advertising on the Bob Davis Podcasts, and providing quality service. And if you're in the metro, actually wherever you're hearing this podcast, if you have those skills, plumbers, pipe fitters, sheet metal workers, HVAC control specialists, contact Ryan Plumbing. They can put you to work. 651-224-4777 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, or online at ryanplumbing.com. And don't forget Ryan for emergency service during this super cold weather. And along the same lines, the whole cold weather thing, don't forget, if you're looking for an SUV to get through this winter, don't forget xgovernmentcars.com. They're offering $500 off through the end of the year for all SUVs. They got Yukons, they got Expeditions from the Border Patrol and FBI, places like that. You can get great terms for financing. Don't forget X Government Cars, 2420 Nevada Avenue North in Golden Valley, 763-777-8782. Check them out online to see what they've got at xgovernmentcars.com.
xgovernmentcars.com.
And for whatever physical practice you do, for exercise, yoga, CrossFit, cycling, competitive sports, don't forget Hydrus makes a huge difference. It'll help you reach down and get the grit. It helps you take it to the edge. Don't forget HydrusPerformance.com. Find out more about Hydrus at HydrusPerformance.com or click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page, HYDRUS, HydrusPerformance.com. And thanks to everyone for donating to the Bob Davis Podcast. Angela sent me $25. Really, really appreciate that. You click on the banner at the top of the page that says Donate to Mobile Podcast Command or the big yellow Donate button. And I really appreciate the donations. Goes right into the diesel fuel fund for Mobile Podcast Command. Thanks for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And again, thanks for the donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 582, this week's radio show. Lot to wait and see what happens with this week, with all the stuff going on with the Electoral College and all this nonsense about fake news and George Soros controlling Facebook and everything else. It's crazy. And we'll talk more about it in future podcasts at thebobdavispodcast.com.